Prospects, huh?
Gotta have them.
Can't play with them. Can't
trade without them. I call them dynasty currency.
What do you have a name for your for each one of the denominations of your currency?
Yeah, I have Ronaldo Hernan dollars. I have Yasmani Grand Doll pesos. I don't know.
The Dynasty Guru presents Dynasty's Child.
We're not experts, we're gurus. That's different.
With your host, Patrick Magnus.
What loser did you bring to us this week?
Featuring Keaton DeRocher.
Well, I did not know that.
And featuring
Jake, I don't know how to say your last name.
It's Devereaux.
Devereaux?
Devereaux.
Devereaux.
There is no N in the name.
Produced by Adam Lawler.
Hey, you guys. Hey, everybody.
Start over.
Yep, why don't you try that one more time.
Hello, and welcome to episode 55 of Dynasty's Child, an absurd podcast that covers all things Dynasty baseball. I'm your host, Patrick Magnus, and I am a writer over at the Dynasty Guru. With me is Keaton DeRocher and Jake Devereaux. Keaton, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, man. Ready to pod.
You sound like it. You sound like you're really ready to go. What did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had a bowl of cereal and some weird drink thing that I can't find the box for it now. But it was like one of those blend thing. I don't know.
Was it good?
Yeah. It was cherry limeade flavored.
Like Sonic.
Yeah.
The Hedgehog?
The restaurant chain.
That sweet, wonderful voice you heard is Jake Devereaux. How is your ALCS hangover?
It's getting better. I finally got a full night's sleep last night for the first time in a while, so I am recharging the batteries for a World Series run, and it is glorious. We actually recorded our Red Seat Podcast ALCS edition last night, so this is it's going to be 3 days in a row of podcasts for me this week. So it's I'm working this mic, baby.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Did you guys do it right after the game?
No, but we did it yesterday, and I'm counting tomorrow where we're going to be on a podcast together talking. So,
all right. Tonight's show, we'll have some live action reactions from what have been some really great playoffs. Not only because we're all Red Sox fans and super pleased that the Red Sox are going to the World Series, but just the games have been awesome. Craig Counsell is this like sneaky bastard manager that's awesome. I love what he's doing. Anyways, and then later we will discuss prospect risers and fallers. We'll update you on Dynasty's Child top pod spec bracket of excellence. And we'll also talk way too early risers and fallers for 2019 outfielders. Any questions you have for the pod, you can submit to us on Twitter. We're at Dynasty's Child. That's at Dynasty's Child. Or you could email us at dynastieschildpod@gmail.com. That's dynastieschildpod@gmail.com. All right, let's jump right into live action reactions. Jake, you again have the best notes. what's your live action reaction?
I actually have no notes.
Don't. Yeah, that's that's why they're the best.
I have Rafael Devers as my live action reaction. A lot of people were down on Rafael Devers after this year, and you know, that is what he deserved after having a pretty poor season for what we'd expect from him coming in. He had a lot of buzz coming into this year, selected very high in drafts, especially in dynasties, and I think he didn't really reward that faith. His defense was bad, which cost him some playing time, and he was inconsistent at the plate. But what we've seen from him in the playoffs is a guy that can hit premium pitching. I mean, there's no time where the pitching is better and more sharp than it is in the playoffs with everything on the line. You're facing great relievers and starters frequently, and he did a lot of damage in both the ALDS and ALCS. And it's just shown again that like the bat can play against anybody. He's only 21. There was a graph going around, or not a graph, just like a little visual going around. He's, I think it was second or third all time behind Andrew Jones and ahead of like Mickey Mantle in terms of RBIs in the playoffs before the age of 21. So he's pretty clutch too. And I just think that if anyone in your league is down on him at all, go ahead and buy with confidence, because he can play third base. We've seen him play it very effectively. I think it's more of a mental thing with him. There's a few adjustments that he needs to make, but the guy is someone who could hit over 280, 30 home runs while playing third base, and I think he could keep that eligibility for, you know, 5 years-ish. So buy in, go. Do it.
I totally agree. Loved Evers. I think this year is a great buying opportunity. Do worry, he has such a hard time with high heat. When pitchers pitch him up in the zone, he just really seems like he has a hard time catching up. But and you were the one that pointed out that he's got pretty solid footwork over at third base. It looks to me like he's just like, it's just glove work that seems to be the major issue with him. But we'll see what happens. I hope you're right that he sticks around at third base, because I own him everywhere. Keaton, what do you got for a live action reaction?
Yeah, just a note on Devers first before moving on. He came up on our pod at a couple different points throughout the year where people were asking, what should I do with Devers? Because the hype that he had coming into the year wasn't living up to it. We just had to constantly remind everybody that he's 21 years old and just stick through it. So if you own him already, hold. But if the Devers owner in your league is a little sour on him, then just go gobble him up. I had a couple things on my observations. So obviously, having watched a lot of the Red Sox, Craig Kimball looks bad. And it's actually kind of interesting that he doesn't have more of a narrative, similar to David Price about his postseason ability. Because he gives up a run almost every single time that he starts or gets into a game in the playoffs. His first couple runs with Atlanta were all right. And then really, just after that, every single time he comes in, he ends up walking a couple, giving up a run. And if Kimbrel is coming in with a one-run lead, I don't feel great about it anymore. But obviously, he was one of the better relievers all season long. So how much do you think, as he is a free agent this season, this stumbling blocks here that he's been running into in the postseason will affect his free agency?
I think it's going to affect him quite a bit. I don't know. I think that the teams that were still in on him will be in on him still, but I just think they might be less willing to go longer. I mean, he is 30 years old right now. Relievers after 30 don't age that gracefully, especially power relievers who don't rely on elite command. I mean, elite command is laughable for him at this point. I would be surprised if anybody went more than 3 years on him. I kind of think that he's going to settle in with an NL team. Maybe like going home to the Braves makes some sense there, because they don't have a closer who's, you know, really taking over at this point. He's a good player still, but we saw the chinks in the armor developing in this year and in 2016, where he walked 5.09 guys per nine in 2016 and 4.48 this year. So as good as 2017 was, those years were pretty shitty.
Yeah, not great. I mean, he's still elite. Like, that's the thing about him, right? And that fastball is, I mean, wild with it, yeah. But it still pops. Like, it pops in the glove. Like, he's still hitting high velocity. I think he gets a pretty good deal, but I don't know that he gets anything over 3 years. I think you're right about that. And I would I'd like the narrative if he went back to the Braves. You know, they're becoming quite a fun team, and that would be a nice little reunion. Keaton, you got any thoughts?
We all agree he's not going to be a Red Sox.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. You know, I could see him giving them a hometown, like giving the Red Sox a discount. I'm not sure. How's that for an answer?
We accept.
Thanks.
The other thing that I had for a live action reaction was, so I saw Cestus Family Barbecue put this out on Twitter, and I thought that it was a nice little think piece. But which player left in the playoffs are you rooting for to win the World Series the most?
Devers. Baby Devers. I'm rooting for him. I want to see how, like, how he celebrates when they win the World Series, and his awkward shaped body is just kind of jumping everywhere and wearing goggles and covered in champagne. Yeah, I'm super into it. I want Devers. Baby Devers.
Patrick, that's such a selfish selection. You are doing this only for your pleasure.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. That's Wait, is that not how we're supposed to do it?
I don't think that was the spirit of it, but I respect it. I'm going to go with Chris Sale, just because he's had to suffer through some really bad White Sox teams. And, you know, he didn't even get to pitch in the playoffs until he came to the Sox. And I just think it would be super cool for, you know, one of the better pitchers over the last 10 years to break through with this team and kind of be one of the culture-changing guys here in Boston.
Yeah, for me, it's Kershaw. I'd like to see Kershaw get one. Obviously, that's a little secondary now that my favorite team is in the World Series. But if they were going to lose, I would prefer it be to Kershaw. Because it's pretty much, he's done everything else. Seems like he's won over the narrative that he can't pitch in the postseason now. So it would be great for him to cap that off with a World Series at some point.
That narrative sucked because, unlike the Price can't pitch in the postseason, there was a fair amount of counter evidence that Kershaw could indeed pitch in the postseason, and people just seem to selectively ignore it.
That seems to be a thing that people do.
Boo. Boo people.
Boo people. That's what we say around here, is we don't like anyone. That's what we do.
Except all right, listeners. Our listeners are great.
Yeah, they're cool. But everybody else, yeah. My live action reaction was Jose Altuve's knee and his future production, and are we worried about it? And is he going to fall in rankings? Is he still the number one second baseman? Let me ask you guys that first before I give my answer. What do you think about some of those questions? Let's start with you, Keaton.
Yeah, he's going to fall. It was very evident that he was playing through pain. But what was also evident was his numbers, by and large, took quite a step back. And what really made him the most valuable was pairing, you know, 30... 40 steals with 20 home run power, and both of those went away. Steals almost completely. It was, I believe, we had brought this up in one of the pods in like a month or two into the season, and he had only attempted like 3 steals through 60 games or some absurd number. I can't remember if that was exactly it, but it was some ridiculous number like that. And that's where a lot of his value comes from. So, honestly, if that's not there, and neither is the power, he's D. Gordon, right? And that's not terribly valuable.
Do you think the power is going to come back?
I think with a healthy knee, he's going to recover in both the power and steals departments for next season. But there's no denying that this season took a hit to his value. I don't think he's going to come all the way back, but... like, I don't see 20 or 30, whatever his last steals amount were, but like mid-teens on both is still pretty valuable for his position.
I don't think that he's going to rebound to like first-round pick status, which he had coming into this year. but I still firmly have him as my number one second baseman, even in dynasty leagues, because of the combination of things that he brings to the table. I do think speed and power will rebound, like Keaton says, to some degree. But The most impressive thing about him is, you know, watching him throughout the ALCS, he still delivers these just incredible at bats and has so much power for his size. You know, he scared the living shit out of me every time he was up at the plate, even on one leg. And just his ability to gut through this injury too and move well around the bases and everything was just, it was kind of startling. Honestly, there was no one I was afraid of more than him outside of George Springer, who's just not human in the playoffs. So I'm fully in on Jose Altuve. I just think we're talking about a generational type of hit tool with him. And he knows how to use absolutely every bit of his ability to maximize the talent that he has.
For what it's worth, too, I mean, steals were down remarkably across all of baseball. So Altuve's, you know, decline in speed is not necessarily completely health related. I mean, clearly in the playoffs, it has absolutely, and you know, we can see him just not being able to run the way he's still real fast, but he's limping around or was limping around. I'm probably a hybrid of the two of you. I think that his hit tool is absolutely amazing. The ratios are always going to be there, but it's the counting stats that I'm worried about. I think the speed is what worries me the most. I think it returns next year. I do think that he steals, I'd go double digits, probably 15, 20 steals at the max. And I think the power comes back full force though. I do think that he's going to hit, he's going to bring back the boom. So, I don't know. If depending on your contention cycle, it might be good to have him, maybe move him if you're like after the beginning of 2019 and he picks up some steam. That might be a good time to move him depending on your contention cycle. But now's a good time to buy him. All right, let's.
I have one more live action reaction.
No way. What do you got?
I do. So. Shouts to TDGX2 champion Merkel for this one. He tweeted this out yesterday, and I thought that it was incredibly fascinating. 535 different pitchers earned a win last season, but only 59 of them won 10 or more, which is down drastically from a peak of 93 in 2010 that had 10-plus wins. And the number of pitchers earning a win has gone up by nearly 130 since 2010 as well. So we see more and more pitchers receiving wins and less pitchers making it to 10-plus, which is obviously a sign of the building games from the ninth inning down rather than from the first inning up. But that's something that obviously affects fantasy as well, because a lot of leagues still use wins, and the ones that don't use quality starts. For quality starts, you gotta get to the sixth inning. And that's happening less and less and less. And that trend is certainly something to keep an eye on, and is very, very fascinating to see all planned out. So you can go follow Merck on Twitter at the Mighty Merck, and he's got a bunch of little graphs and nuggets there on his timeline that are pretty dope.
Sounds pretty socialist to me.
I think so. I think you're going to need to do, for fantasy categories, you'd probably need to do some sort of hybrid category like we do with saves and holds in some leagues. I think quality starts and wins might be something that we might need to incorporate into the game as it continues to change, but we'll see.
So they could double up?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, if you had a quality start and win, yeah.
I'm still disappointed that my suggestion for a 1-by-1 league using batter war and pitcher war was rejected prior to the season.
I don't think that would be that exciting.
No, I don't. I don't think it would be exciting at all.
Before we move on from the playoffs, real quick,
yeah,
I just wanted to. See what you guys thought of Craig Counsell's version of the Curly Ogden Gambit, where he pitched Wade Miley for like five pitches and took him out and then used him again yesterday.
I freaking loved it. I thought it was so great. Yeah. You know, it's an, it's another one. It's another case of like, it's interesting because it's like a managerial, unwritten rule, you know, to like submit your starting pitcher, 24 hours in advance. And they've been, you know, just doing it, you know, at game time, announcing who their starter is. And now this little trick, I loved it. And I loved how into it Wade Miley was, too. You could tell that he was, like, thrilled about it. What about you, Keaton?
Yeah, the best part of it, I think, is so once it was announced that Miley was the starter, like, the day before the game, he was doing, like, the press conference as the starter, and it was, like, 10 plus minutes and answered 16 questions. He answered more questions in the press conference than he threw pitches in the game.
And Jake, how do you feel about it?
I loved it. I thought it was just peak gamesmanship, and like, there's no issue with it. There's nothing that's shady about it at all. It's like the best thing about the Dodgers is their depth at hitter, and he did his best to erase that advantage by doing this, and I think it's awesome, and people should do it whenever, especially in the playoffs. I mean, I don't think it'll ever become a regular season thing just because it's more trouble than it's worth, but you know, when you're the Brewers and you're trying to get back to the World Series for the first time since 82, like, do it, man. You don't have any starting pitchers. You need to do shit like this. So props to Council. It was awesome.
Speaking of gamesmanship, one more. So
Adam's going to kill us.
I know. Sorry. Aaron Judge gets a win. Game two, leaving Fenway Park, playing New York. And then Bregman posting on his Instagram the Astros going back-to-back-to-back off Eovaldi. Personally, I loved both of those. And I want players to troll each other in this playoffs as often as possible, and I'm sure that comes to no shock to either of you that I'm pro troll.
Yeah, no,
but
king of the trolls.
There was a lot of people that were upset about Judge playing New York, and a lot of people confused as to why Bregman would give people bulletin board material, but I'm all for it. I think it brings out some of the personality of the game, and I want to see a lot more of it. So I was curious if you guys felt the same or if you guys were offended by either of those.
No, absolutely not.
I wasn't
not
offended by either of them. No, I just liked that in both cases, the perpetrator ended up getting his ass kicked, especially with Bregman. He didn't have a hit the rest of the time, and Eovaldi struck him out with 102 to end his ALCS.
So, yeah, that was beautiful.
That could not have been more poetic.
Man, he is a force, though. That is a scary baseball player, Bregman. He is real good.
You see Price yelling "post that" after the 102?
No, I didn't say that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I'm with you, Keaton. Like, just as far as personalities go, I think it's really good for baseball. You know, bring out the players' personalities. It's never a bad thing unless they're terrible people. So as the host here, I'm going to call a little bit of an audible. And I'm gonna jump down to the fantasy league and start with all too early look at next year's outfielders. So we're talking about risers and fallers and a couple tweeners, ones that had years that didn't quite rise or fall. So Jake, who you got as your riser for 2019?
My riser is David Peralta. We had him all the way down at number 91 in our rankings this past year. And he's 31 years old, so he's not, you know, some ancient guy. And in 2018, over 146 games played, he hit 30 home runs, drove in 87 RBIs, and hit 293 for the second straight year in a row with a 352 OBP. Those were identical, and he had a 130 WRC plus. So he had an amazing year offensively. And the stats were fairly in line on a rate status from what he's had in the past. He did display more power this year than ever before. But like, I've always felt confident that David Peralta had a really strong offensive skill set, and now the fact is he's being used a lot, and he seems to have figured out how to tap in a little bit more to his left-handed power. And I just think that he's going to be a great value at his age going into next season.
I totally agree.
I don't know why. I just never can get on board with David Peralta. I don't know why. Like, I know he's a good player. I know that he's had a good season, but I just can't buy in. I don't know. So you keep him and win, and I'll not have him and lose. Keaton, you've got a podcast favorite. We just can't stop talking about.
Sure do. Nope. I'm sure that we will find something else to beat into the ground as much as this next year. But until then, Eddie Rosario. We had him.
Didn't you talk about him last week?
Yeah,
probably
we did. Because we were reviewing the bets, our Matt Olson Eddie Rosario bet, who finished with the same exact score.
All right. So we had him at 35, and for me, he's easily top 20, probably top 15 in the outfield. There was a strong run where he was the second best outfielder behind Trout until his second half injuries. Even I am going to temper that and say he's probably not like a top three, top five outfielder, but he's extremely talented, and he's still only 26 years old. So he really upped his launch angle.
Just turned 27.
Just turned 27. There you go.
Yep.
Still pretty young.
Yep.
He upped his launch angle 4 degrees up to 17.3 this season, and increased his hard hit rate and barrel percentage. His barrel percentage was 8.3, which was full 2% above the major league average and 1.5 above his own personal average coming into the season. So much like every other hitter in the major leagues nowadays is focusing on hitting the ball hard and in the air. And he was pretty darn effective at it. And so given the consistent results that he's put together here in back-to-back seasons and his youth, he's a guy that I really like a lot, and we should definitely have higher than 35 coming into the season.
Yeah, I 1,000% agree with you. Rosario will be much higher. I wish that he hadn't tailed off so much at the end of the season, though. He really collapsed, so
yeah, he basically disappeared from the baseball field entirely. Yeah.
I think good. He just is what he is. And he's good. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I like him a lot, too.
You like him a lot, too? Like, do you like him the way Keaton likes him?
No, I don't like him as much as Keaton likes him. But I just think that with outfield being shockingly shallow at this point, I think that he is easily a top 25 guy.
So speaking of outfielders that we love and that I can ignore, Franmil Reyes, once a top pod spec, he's actually in this this week's matchup that I'm going to have Keaton tell you about a little later. But yeah, Franmil Reyes had a crazy second half once he changed his leg kick. He stopped using this big leg kick and managed to raise his launch angle. Bashed 16 home runs over the course of the year, walked at a good clip, struck out a little too much. You imagine that average is probably going to come down. Although he does hit the ball incredibly hard. let's see, the major league average is 87.3 miles per hour for exit velocity, and he was up to 92.3. So he's a big man that bashes the baseball, so no surprise that I love him. So I don't think he'll necessarily be an asset in batting average. His XBA was 253, and that BABIP was 345. That's quite high, and although he hits the ball hard, he's not a very fast man, not fleet of foot. So we did not have him ranked going into last season, and so he'll definitely be ranked this year. In my outfield rankings, I have got him 40. So You guys have any thoughts on that big, sexy man?
All right. I think as long as he gets regular playing time next year, which I expect him to, he can hit over 30 home runs fairly easily. I'm still skeptical of the amount that he strikes out, but I do think that the hit tool is good enough that he should hit like 240, 250, even if he doesn't run into the same BABIP luck that he had this year. He also scorches the shit out of the ball, like you said. So that 70 power definitely plays. I don't know. He's going to hit the Western Metal Supply building a lot, I'm sure, next year. So that'll be cool. I don't tend to love players with this profile. I know that Patrick loves them.
I do.
But I do like him, and I think that he can be a very valuable fantasy asset. So I think it's a good pick, Patrick. Good job.
Well, thanks. Keaton, you got your shit together?
I do, and I was slightly off. So it had been a few pods since we had mentioned the triple play, and I could not remember who I wrote about, and I thought it was Franmil Reyes. It was not. It was Franchi Cordero. But that led me down to another path. At the beginning of the year, we talked about San Diego as being a really interesting team that had a lot of it just interesting, kind of fun guys to watch that we kind of feels like San Diego is going to be pretty competitive in a couple years. The outfielders that they have just absolutely hammer the crap out of the ball. Both or all three of Franmil Reyes, Franchi Cordero, and Hunter Renfro have exit velocities in the 90s, which is pretty darn hard. And it's a young, very interesting core of outfielders that just hammer the ball and strike out a ton. That it's honestly like I feel like the San Diego outfield is the outfield version of Milwaukee's infield, where they're not super concerned with anything other than just hit the crap out of the ball, and we're going to throw scope at shortstop and Travis Shaw at second and just see what the hell happens. Kind of has the same feel with San Diego's outfield. And it's just a bunch of guys that hammer the shit out of the ball and are going to be pretty fun to watch. And it just kind of harps back to what we had talked about in the preseason, where San Diego, just the way the team is constructed, is just really interesting.
Another thing is that Mejia is coming up, and he is ranked as an outfielder and I think DH on MLB Pipeline. And so do you guys think he has any chance at all of stealing playing time from those big outfielders out there?
Man.
I don't think so. Mejia made it very clear that he wants to play. He's made it very clear that he wants to play catcher. And I don't think their current catcher, his name is escaping me, Austin Hedges. I just wrote about him. If you guys want to go read my 2019 Dynasty Risers and Fallers catcher, you can go read about him. But I think that Hedges is going to lose playing time. I think he becomes a backup defensive catcher that probably comes in later in games. And I think that Mejia is going to get time behind the plate. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that most of the time for Mejia is going to come behind the plate. The Padres were super clear about that when they traded for Mejia. They said that they view him as a catcher. There's no chance he's going to move off the position. If anything, I expect him to sort of improve his defense from continuing to be around a defensive specialist like Austin Hedges. Hedges' bat sucks. If he does play any time in the outfield, it'll be in left field. Because he's not that great. And Hunter Renfro is the weakest of that group, in my opinion, in terms of Franchi and Franmil. So I could see him taking occasional starts from Hunter Renfro in left field, but I don't think that he's going to spend a whole ton of time there. I expect him to get most of the time at catcher, especially as they're building up this rotation here. There's a lot of young guys that are going to be in that rotation next year, and I think that you probably want to get them acclimated to the catcher that they're going to be throwing to in the future.
All right, let's move on to the tweeners. Any other parting thoughts here on Mejia or Reyes or the Padres?
Nah.
All right.
Are we doing the Fallers first?
I think Padres are going to be super interesting going forward. So I am looking forward to what the hell happens with that team.
They Me have too. A lot of
super interesting pieces.
They get that, and that farm is still loaded. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, we should probably do Fallers, huh? That's a good thing to do. Keats, who's your fall or who is your faller?
Well, I apologize to you, Patrick, but my faller is Sunday Santana.
I hate this.
And we were I know. But here's the thing. I don't think any of us were unjustified in how aggressively we ranked him. Consensus was at 16. He was coming off a season where he hit 30 bombs, had 100 RBIs, and I believe if he wasn't at 300 on the average, he was pretty close to it, wasn't he not? It was pretty impressive for a 25-year-old. And then something weird happened where they didn't have a position for him to play, which for someone who displayed that much talent, it's kind of surprising that they're just like, nah, yeah, we're going to go make a bunch of trades so that you can't play. Obviously, it seems to have worked out for them as they are one game away from a World Series. And Domingo Santana has contributed here in the playoffs. But that's one that I think a lot of people really didn't see coming. And the sparing time that he did have, he was not successful with it. It didn't really force the Brewers' hand into giving him more regular playing time. So, yeah, he's got a drop, unfortunately.
I thought the way that they handled this whole situation was really stupid. And obviously, the result worked out being that they're in Game 7 of the NLCS right now. But it doesn't mean that the process was good. And you just had a guy in 2017 coming off a 30 home run season where he was, you know, worth 3.3 WAR and certainly could have fetched you, you know, maybe a starting pitcher, which would have helped this team. There was something that he could have gotten you as a 25, 26-year-old piece. And I think the Brewers squandered that because now his value is cratered again, and he's not going to play for this team in any meaningful capacity. So I don't understand it from their perspective. I think it was really poorly handled.
Yeah, it's the biggest heartbreak for me of this this past season. I was losing him. I love him so much, and it's just so sad that he didn't get to play. Hopefully, I'd like to see him as a DH in the AL, because I know that he isn't the best defensive outfielder. So get him in as a DH somewhere. That might be fun. He's still young. He can still play. Give him a shot. Get him somewhere. And you ruined his value. Don't ruin his career. Move him. all right. I'm going to jump into my faller real quick. Lewis Brinson. What a not so good season this gentleman had. He ended up batting below 200, I believe. I need to double check that. Yep. 199. So he batted 199. He had an OBP of 240. He did manage 11 home runs in 400 plate appearances. But one thing that's concerning is that the speed was not there. This is a common theme throughout this season. He managed only 2 stolen bases. So I hope that that's not the case, because Brinson is really supposed to be a contributor in both home runs and steals. So I would like to see him get back to doing that. Although I suppose in order to do that, you need to be on base, and he did not get on base. I, for the record, still really like Brinson. I know that we haven't had some pretty sad performances from him, whether it be his time with the Brewers or this full year with the Marlins. He's someone I wrote up for the triple play for the Marlins. And he has a great work ethic. He's had a ton of injuries that I think have really derailed him. I wrote in my article that I really thought that he needed just a full year to play in the majors. So I am, you know, Miami's not going to be playing anybody else. They're going to give Brinson a pretty long leash. And I think there's still hope that he develops into a solid player. I'm sure you hate him, Jake, because his plate discipline is gross. His hit tool is not great.
You are correct, sir.
Are you the emperor? What was that?
That's the emperor of I hate guys with no hit tools, and his is virtually non-existent. I don't see a promising future for this young man as a baseball player, but I'm sure he's lovely.
We'll see. Maybe we can get a dumb bet in next year or sooner.
I love dumb bets. Let's do it.
All right. I'll think on it. All right. Which one of you two wants to talk about your follower? Oh, wait. You already did, Keaton. You broke my heart. So, Jake,
thanks
who you got?
For listening.
I listened. I just forgot.
I went with a gaggle of followers between 31 and 34. I was looking at our ranks, and I got to the 30s, and I was just like, oh, dear God. And I saw Manuel Margot, Andrew McCutchen, Adam Eaton, and Kyle Schwarber all listed there. Margot, it just turns out, isn't as good as everyone thought. I thought he was too high initially anyhow, and he doesn't even get playing time in that outfield anymore. Andrew McCutchen is old and declining, and I just don't see a bright future for this not young man. Adam Eaton can't stay healthy. When he is healthy, he's pretty good, but not super sexy, and he cannot stay healthy. And then Kyle Schwarber, he is befuddling to me for many different reasons. Theo loves him, yet he does not get all that much playing time at all on Joe Maddon's team, and he didn't really get much playing time in the playoffs. And I can't remember who it was. I was watching a Cubs playoff game this year, and someone was playing ahead of him who I just didn't understand why they were playing ahead of him. And it was like a key at bat, and Schwarber was on the bench, and the cameraman kept panning over to Schwarber's face, which was just sheer disbelief that he wasn't taking the at bat that was currently happening. So until he gets off the Cubs, I don't think that Schwarber is going to have the ability to develop into what we thought he could be. And I think he needs a change of scenery because his face told it all.
Yeah, I do like Albert Almora, but Schwarber should have been having that at bat for sure. And
that was who it was. Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's bananas. it's a problem with a lot of Cubs players, though. You know, you've got Maddon there, and then players just don't get that many at bats. You know, another person that suffered from that was Ian Happ, who's another player I really love on that team, and he just did not get enough at bats. Yeah, it's a bummer.
Yeah, this is Anthony and Bordino, a longtime listener, first time caller. I want to know about Clint Frazier and whether or not he's going to be anything, because he's clogging up my bench and I'm not sure what to do with him. Thanks.
What the hell just happened?
Apparently we take calls now.
I love that.
Okay.
These are our listeners.
Adam is a producer and a comedian, you guys.
That was good.
You serious about Clint Frazier, though? Do you want me to tell you about him?
If you want to. He's a faller.
I still think he's going to be good. He's definitely a faller because of all
the concussions and shit.
Yeah, I'm still high on him. I mean, it is scary. But, it didn't ruin Joe Mauer's career. He had to switch positions, but he was still able to play. And John Olerud played for a long time. So
with a helmet.
Yes, with a helmet. Maybe he'll have to wear a helmet, so he won't look as cool, but he'll still play baseball.
I think that Clint Frazier will be playing outfield for the San Francisco Giants next year when Bumgarner gets traded to the Yankees in the offseason.
I don't know that I love that move for either team, so I hope that does not happen.
Yeah, that seems
weird. all right, I'm calling another audible here as the host, and we're going to skip this tweener section and jump right into the top prospect. All right, so let's jump into, we've got some prospect risers and fallers. We took a look at Jesse's preseason top 200, and we found some players that jumped up that list throughout the season and some that fell. So, Keaton, why don't you lead us off here?
Yeah. My riser is all the Luis Garcias. Both of them, the Nationals Luis Garcia and the Phillies Luis Garcia, were not in Jesse's top 200. And for me, both of them are either in the top 100 or they're borderline right on the edge. Both of them have really, really good hit tools. Phillies will steal like 20 plus bases to go on top of that. Washington's has a little bit more power. Both of them are young international signees from last season and the season before. And
so, they naturally they get like a huge bump from you.
Yeah, probably not shocking that that's where I went, but they both had really good years, and both of them have really good hit tools, and both of them have the same name, so that's fun. But those guys are certainly guys that should rise pretty heavily through the ranks and start taking notice of both if you haven't already.
All right, so Jake, who is your riser?
My riser is Joe Adell, and I know this is a little bit boring, but he was all the way down at 49 on the preseason list, and the big question mark with Joe Adell was his hit tool coming into the year. Everybody thought he was super toolsy, but he has basically turned himself into one of the best prospects in the world right now, in El Mundo. And he's awesome. So I just think there's very few questions about him at this point. And he was way too low. So if you were someone who picked him up because of his athleticism, you are a happy, happy person right now. Short and sweet.
He's somebody that has a bit of a problem with his hit tool, right? Or is he or not?
Not, I know not you're, anymore.
I know you're all about that hit tool. All right.
Well, he is a person where it worked out for him. Like, his hit tool was underestimated.
Got it. So mine was super easy too. I guess a bit obvious. And that was Wander Franco. He is amazing. 17 years old and hit 11 home runs in rookie ball, while posting a 9.9 walk rate and a 7% K rate with an ISO over 200. I am stoked about this guy. I think he was the only scouting report I had read on him when he was signed was nothing glowing. Everything kind of seemed mediocre from what I read. And so I was not expecting this kind of production from him. We had him ranked down at 149. And I believe him to be in the top 10 now. I would have him as a top 10 prospect. And I believe that he'll probably be the number one prospect by the end of the year.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head with that one. In terms of risers and fallers, this is the biggest riser from this season. I mean, we're basically talking about like a 200 rank jump. That's completely justified. And he is extremely talented at playing baseball.
Jake, any thoughts on Wander Franco?
I would like to wander into a draft and pick him up.
Yeah, me too. Maybe I'll draft him in our mock draft we're doing right now. It is my pick.
I like him a lot.
All right, let's talk about fallers. And I got to tell you about my heartbreak. Forgive me if I butcher this name. It was Yalen Ortiz, the outfielder for the Philadelphia Phillies. He was a...
I think it's big... Jalen.
Jalen? Okay, Jalen Ortiz.
Yeah.
Keaton, you're the resident guy who goes and looks up proper pronunciation.
Yep, already doing it.
Anyways, you know, I came in, you know, the deal with him was that he was raw but had tools, particularly power. He's got massive raw power, but he just has not been able to translate the skills into minor league ball, and he's probably going to have to repeat his level next year, which is not great for development. I'm still keeping my eye on him. I'm not dropping him in all of my leagues. I still just am holding out hope that he figures it out and just hits a ton of dingers and comes up to Philly and rakes. You get a report on that name pronunciation, Keaton?
Google Translate. So BREF has nothing. So I just plopped it into Google Translate, and it's Hyland.
Okay, Hylan Ortiz. I don't know his name, but I do love his big beefy body. all right, Keaton, you've got a much easier name for me. Austin Hayes, who was somebody I was familiar with. What's your deal with him?
He really didn't have that great of a year, and we had him at number 17. So based off of the Baltimore isn't real great at developing really anyone, and the fact that he had a pretty down season, and we had him ranked pretty aggressively, seems like the perfect mixture for a faller. He's a guy that actually a lot of people were talking about at the beginning of the year as someone who might actually get up and start playing for Baltimore relatively quickly, but he definitely took a rather large step back in my eyes in his development this season, and he's probably maybe not even top 75 for me at this point. It's a pretty big fall.
Yeah, that's such a bummer. I was kind of in on him after his season last year, and then he just did not perform well at all this year. I forgot to mention that my prospect was ranked at 125, and I would expect him to just not even be on Jesse's top 200 next year. So we'll see. All right, Jake, who you got?
I'm going to pile on the Yankees here a little bit and go with Esteban Florial, who we had as our 40th ranked prospect on Jesse's list this year. A lot of people were talking about Florial as a future five-tool outfielder. He did run into some injury issues this year. He had a broken hamate bone, which he had to get surgery on, and he missed some time, development time. Florial's still just 20 years old. What people loved about him was his 60 raw power and the fact that he had some good speed as well. But the knock on him was he had a hit tool that was graded as 20 out of 40 by most scouts right now. And that was the big question mark with him. He does strike out a lot, even at lower levels. And he came back from the injury last year and at high A, only hit 3 home runs with a 105 ISO. And swung and missed quite a bit. So I guess I'm not very confident that he's going to reach the high heights. I think the ceiling is still there if everything clicks correctly, but he strikes me as sort of a poor man's Lewis Brinson, and I don't want anything to do with him. So I would drop him, you know, well beyond the top 100, and that's mostly on the missed development, the injury, the nature of the injury, and the hit tool.
It does sound a lot like Lewis Brinson, just with the hit tool and the injuries disrupting development. So that's sad. I mean, I wasn't really ever in on him, but sad for some people. Sad for him. All right, let's transition into our Dynasty's Child top pod spec bracket of excellence, which is what I'm calling it. I know that's not the official name, but that's what I'm just going to start calling it. Keaton, can you give us an update on last week's matchups?
Yeah, so last week we kicked it off with the play-in matchups. First was Tirso Ornelas, as presented to us by the great Brett Sayre when he was on the pod with us, versus fellow TDG alum Craig Goldstein with Christian Robinson. And the winner of that matchup was Christian Robinson. And I'll look up the percentages real quick. That matchup was 66-34 for Christian Robinson. The next one was one of Jake's guys, Jose Pujols versus Emma Bacalari's Nathaniel Lowe, and or Lau, whatever. And he won very convincingly 85-15. So, Jake, I'm sorry, but you're down a prospect.
Boo. So, that's okay. Lowe's a better prospect.
Yes. Going region by region now, starting with the Ian region, which is the upper left. We have Christian Robinson versus Franmil Reyes and Chris Paddock versus Corey Ray. And right now, Franmil Reyes is leading with 57% of the votes. There's 11 hours left on that one. And my boy, Chris Paddock, is leading with 68%. with 11 hours left on that one as well. So still time to get some votes in today, which obviously means absolutely nothing when you hear it, because these will be over. And I just realized that.
We should probably plan that a little differently next time.
Yeah. Doesn't matter if there's 11 hours left, because this is going to be posted well beyond that. But, hey, you know what? This is still pretty fun. So, I mean, it seems like a lot of people are having fun with this. We've gotten like double the votes now that we're into round two. It seems like more people are kind of jumping into it, getting on, having fun. So next, once these finish tomorrow, we will launch the Adam region, which is Brendan McKay versus Vidal Bruhan and Alex Kirilloff versus Austin Allen.
Do I only have one guy left in this competition?
Yeah, all you have is Gavin Lux.
It's a good guy to have.
Gavin Lux. Yeah.
I love Gavin Lux.
Assuming Chris Paddock holds, I'll be sitting in good shape.
You've got like a million guys. I don't want to even hear it from you.
I do.
I do think that the fans got it right in the vote-in round. The fans definitely got it right, in my opinion. You guys agree?
I do.
I do agree. Are the fans continuing to get it right with Fran Mill and Chris Paddock?
Yeah, yes. I think so. Although Robinson could be something special, so we'll see.
Good job, fans.
He's so far off, though, so I like Fran Mill.
Yeah, that's true. So we got some listener questions. Do we have time for that? All right. Keaton, do you want to handle that section, or you want me to do it? Or Jake, sure. Do you want to do it? Keaton, you got it? All right.
Yeah. Our first question comes via email from Jack. He says, been listening all season. Happy to see TDG still going strong. I have a few players I wanted to hear what the three of you knew of, since the media has largely gone dark on them in the second half. So he has a bunch of names. So I'll just read them off, and we'll talk about one hitter and one pitcher and stuff. So hitters, Trey Mancini, Ender Inciarte, Randall Grichuk, Byron Buxton. Anybody from that list stick out?
Buxton's toast still. I don't talk about hit tool. I hope that he continues to play in baseball, because I love watching him defensively, but I'm still out on him. So out. Sorry, Buxton.
Yeah, they really misjudged him. I mean, there were great reports on his hit tool as well when he was coming out. There was almost no holes. I don't understand what the gap is. I mean, maybe just quality of contact just blinded scouts with him, but everyone was wrong on him. Ender Inciarte is the guy out of that group I'm most confident is going to have a significant role going forward out of that group. So the other guys are fine. Grichuk and Mancini are kind of funny, because they're both like the same type of player, you know, low average, high power kind of guys who fit the mold of the current MLB to the T.
Yeah, Mancini is a guy that I've constantly been talking about all season long as a guy not to sleep on, because his tertiary numbers and StatCast stuff looks pretty strong. It's just the, you know, the core stat line was a bit down, but he had a tremendous second half, and I was reminding everybody not to forget about him. But Ender Inciarte, I agree with Jake. I love Inciarte, and I was making a case in our outfield rankings the preseason that he should be ranked higher than Adam Eaton, and I still believe that. I am all in on Ender Inciarte. He's one of my faves. So the pitchers that Jack brought us are Brandon Morrow, Michael Givens, former Triple Play alum that Adam wrote about, Alex Reyes, Ross Stripling, and Kenta Maeda.
Kenta Maeda is my guy. You know, I know that it's really tough with the Dodgers because they have so many pitching options. I'm convinced that the move to the pen for Maeda was mostly just contract based, so that they didn't have to give him some additional money. And I think that he's really good, underrated. So I would be trying to buy cheap on him in most leagues. I actually tried to do that from Jake, and he wouldn't let me.
I also love Kenta Maeda, which is why I wouldn't let Patrick buy him cheap for me. I think he's going to start next year. And I think that when he starts, good things happen. So, and the move to the Penn, also, I think it's fair to say, was performance-driven too, because last year's run to the World Series, Kenta Maeda was like maybe the most important member of the Dodgers' pen throughout that run. He definitely hasn't replicated that this year, but he was great. But I want to give some love to Ross Stripling too, because he had a tremendous season, and I think that both of these guys have a chance to start for the Dodgers next year, because there's a few guys who are up for them, and I can't remember who, but I don't know. I like both of these guys quite a bit.
Sorry, I was just going to say the sheer amount of depth that the Dodgers have is just so ridiculous. It's like a fantasy baseball team. It's like in a shallow league.
They could have two teams out of that roster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Keaton, you were going to talk about Alex Reyes?
That's the name that jumped out to me. And I think it's good not to forget about him, because the talent is off the charts. Injuries are a bit of a concern now that they've kind of piled up, but he's still incredibly young and still has plenty of development time left that, you know, will happen at the high A or triple A or majors when he comes back. The Cardinals are an interesting team just because you're not really sure what direction their pitching is going. They have a bunch of young guys that could be really good or could just be an entire pitching staff full of, you know, number three starters. But Reyes' talent is there if he can come back and just stay healthy. And he's young enough where he's still worth the investment at this point. Last piece to this email was just a couple notes on guys that missed all of this season and have been largely forgotten. And it's Danny Salazar and Trevor Rosenthal. And for me, both of them can just be continued to be forgotten.
Yeah, Salazar especially. I just, like, that guy broke my heart too many times. I'm done with him. Get out of there. Get out of my life.
I sold him in TDGX too when the Shelder stuff was first happening. So I dodged a bullet there. I agree with Keaton though. Leave these guys alone.
All right, the second email.
Oh, yeah. What do we got?
From Simon. This is a good one. I'm not going to read all of it because it's pretty lengthy, but the gist of it is a strategic point of he just won a league, so congratulations to you for winning that league, and congratulations to all the winners this season, actually. We didn't get a chance to get that out yet, but all you winners, good job.
Thanks.
I didn't win a single league this year.
That's not shocking. Simon here won the inaugural season of a 16-team league, and his question is, what does he do with his draft pick? So does he try and spin it for a major league piece that can try and help him continue his run? Should he use the pick? It's an interesting kind of strategy piece to it, and I think largely for my answer to this kind of depends on what the construct of your team is. If you won largely on the back of 30-plus-year-olds, I would say probably trade the pick for another MLB piece that can help extend this run if you're not planning on blowing it up. But if it was largely on mid to late 20s, I would say use the pick, sit on it, and use it and try and start backfilling some of your roster to, again, try and extend your run. It's never a bad thing to use the pick because, as Jake will probably allude to, prospects are currency. So whoever you take now could very easily be flipped for something else in the future, unless there's someone who really, really values whatever that pick is going to be and makes an offer ahead of the pick. I don't see a problem in either scenario using the pick on someone and just kind of sitting on the team that you... I think the biggest thing for people in these situations is once they win a league, they think, okay, that's it. Now I need to rebuild again and start blow it up and build from the ground up and get a contender again. But you don't necessarily have to do that. You can just keep on winning. There's nothing wrong with that.
I have a lot of thoughts on this because so much of this depends on the context of your league. If you play in a 16-team league where you play with a lot of sharp, savvy prospect people, this pick becomes less valuable. And then in that case, I think the best thing to do is trade it. 95% of me wants you to trade this pick because when it is a first round pick, it has beauty to everybody who has their guy that they're thinking about taking in the first round, and they can imagine your pick as whoever they want it to be. And if you just pick a guy who you are not necessarily enamored with on your list, they could lose value in the near term future. I think with a first rounder, it's almost more valuable to trade it before you pick it, unless there's someone that you love. And it's always good to extend your runs. I mean, like, there is always something you can do to improve your team, whether that's packaging a player that you have at a position that might be a little bit on the weaker side with the pick to upgrade there. There's always ways to upgrade, and you got to get creative, and creative owners tend to be winning owners. So I would use your currency and extend your run.
I think it depends on the format of the league of whether it allows in-season pickups. Because draft value, like as far as like a pick is concerned, there's no better time to trade the pick than in the off-season. That's when picks are worth their most. During the season, when the draft is further away, owners tend to be a little more dismissive of picks. It's actually a really great time to stock up on them. I think if you can pick up prospects throughout the year in this league, that you can trade that pick. But if you can't, then I think you should definitely use it. But mostly, I do mostly agree with what Keaton and Jake said, both of you, even though they're a little different. We all had a little bit of a different answer.
Yeah, I liked both of your answers better than mine.
Well, go with your heart. Follow some. I hope some of that information was helpful to you, Simon. All right, time to wrap this thing up. So, this has been Dynasty's Child. I have been your host, Patrick Magnus, and I can be found at the Dynasty Guru writing words, or on Twitter, tweeting stupid tweets at the Green Magnus. Keaton, you can be found at KeatonTDG. And have you written anything recently?
I haven't, but I got a couple things in the chamber that'll be coming out in the next couple weeks. Follow-up piece to my mid-season all-disappointment team. I will have a full-season all-disappointment team and all-exceeds expectations team coming out. And Patrick and I are working on a top 50 draft prospects for first-year drafts. Not exactly sure when that will come out. Probably closer to the new year, but you can look forward to that.
I agree. It's a good list. We've got the list done. Now we're just sort of tweaking it. Jake, where can we find you? You're on the internet all over the place.
You can find me on Twitter at DevJake, and you can find my other podcast, the Red Seat Podcast, at overthemonster.com. We just released an episode today about the Red Sox, and we're going to have another one coming out on Monday about the Sox. So if you're still watching the playoffs and interested in that, go check that out. I haven't written anything recently, but when I do, it is there. So check it.
Thanks, as always, to Adam Waller for producing this podcast. You can find him on Twitter, hopefully still, if his children haven't chased him out of the house and at the StatCast era. And I think that's going to do it. So have a good day. And as always, be the best bird dog you can be. Sticking when you're lying to me.